to capitalize on the rapidly dawning digital age. Digital tools magnify the abilities that make us unique in the world. The ability to think, the ability to articulate our thoughts, the ability to work together to act on those thoughts. I strongly believe that if companies empower their employees to solve problems and give them potent tools to do this with, they will always be amazed at how much creativity and initiative will blossom forth. Appendix. Build digital processes on standards. Business at the Speed of Thought describes the benefits of a digital nervous system. This appendix describes how to build one, the architecture and implementation choices. You build a digital nervous system with the new digital technologies, PC hardware, low-cost packaged software, and internet protocols. Because the new systems are built on standards, all of the pieces, hardware, software, and communications, are easier to put together. The appendix outlines a PC and Windows-based methodology for building a digital nervous system and explicitly covers Microsoft technology for creating a good flow of information. It's a bit more technical than the book overall, but not by much. A major shift in the computer industry has made end-to-end business solutions much more feasible. The realignment of the computer industry from vertically integrated vendors to horizontally integrated, customer-driven solutions has brought prices down dramatically and offered more choice. In the old vertically integrated computer industry, a customer would buy almost all of the elements of a solution from a single company: the chips, the computer systems built on the chips, the operating system, the network hardware, and service. Every vendor, IBM, Fujitsu, HP, Digital, NCR, and others, had its own vertical solution. Sales volumes were low and prices were high. Integration among vendors was difficult and expensive. Switching costs for customers were very high, since every piece of the solution would have to change. These vertically integrated vendor solutions are being displaced by the PC approach, in which specialized companies give customers a choice in each of the infrastructure layers: chips, computer systems, system software, business applications, networking, systems integration, and service. Although many companies operate in more than one layer, a customer can choose any vendor in any layer. This new horizontal structure offers customers maximum flexibility. Creating the new computer industry. Horizontal integration makes for high volume and low price. The independence of each layer means that competition drives each layer to evolve at maximum speed. Intel and Advanced Micro Devices push each other in chip design. Dozens of companies compete to provide components such as memory, hard drives, and CD-ROMs. Major computer manufacturers vie with one another to use these components to create the fastest and most powerful machines. Apple, HP, IBM, Microsoft, Sun Microsystems, and startups such as B and Red Hat Software compete to improve system software, including middleware. IBM, Microsoft, Oracle, and others compete in databases. Bonn, J.D. Edwards, PeopleSoft, Oracle, and SAP compete in financial software packages. Cisco, Lucent Technologies, Nortel, and 3Com compete in network infrastructure. Network integrators include Enex, INS, Regional Bell Operating Companies, Vanstar, and Wang. System integrators include Anderson Consulting, the Big Five accounting firms, Capgemini, Compaq, CTP, Fujitsu, HP, ICL, SNI, and Unisys. Although I've listed the large companies, in some layers, a multitude of smaller companies is also very important. In application software, for example, the diverse needs of each industry are met by smaller companies that provide specialized applications. These thousands of smaller firms depend on the existence of a horizontally aligned market. Their businesses would simply not be feasible without high volume. A shift from a vertical to a horizontal alignment is also occurring in the telecommunications industry, as traditional providers are now able to build new systems on standard PC hardware and software systems and the Internet IP protocols, rather than on their own proprietary stovepipe systems. This delayering will increase competition and customer choice in telecommunications, just as it has in computers. Developing a digital nervous system, blueprint required. Integration among the many vendors in the horizontal computer industry requires a blueprint. In nature, DNA provides such a blueprint, instructing each cell on how to function to stay in concert with all others. In business, successful organizations have their own blueprints for technology. To date, they've all been different. In an age of interconnectivity, businesses need an architecture that extends outward to partners and customers. Microsoft products are developed according to a blueprint that establishes a single programming model for the future, the Windows Distributed Internet Architecture. Windows DNA has four parts. The first is a forms approach to the user interface that seamlessly integrates web pages using HTML with more powerful features found in traditional desktop applications. The Windows family uses HTML, a standard way to display simple graphics, for PCs, simple kiosk-type devices, TV-like devices, and handheld devices, with content rendered appropriately for the capabilities of each machine. Windows also provides more powerful rendering and other operating system services needed to support rich peripherals, quick response, and offline applications. Windows, for example, can display a multidimensional data set without going back to the server every time the user wants to change the view. It can track user actions and calculate what commands the user might want to perform next, and it gives PCs the ability to support speech recognition and natural language processing. The second is a component object model, or COM, designed primarily to manage business logic across a network. COM is a specification for dividing up a computer program into many different parts, called objects, and easily hooking them together so that they interact reliably and securely across a variety of sites. The fundamental concept of components is that a programmer can use them without understanding their inner workings. A programmer just needs to understand how they can be used. When an application needs updating, a programmer can change only the parts needing work and can download components over the network to provide upgrades to users. Components are also valuable because no company is going to rewrite all its applications when new technologies or computer languages come along. Components provide access to useful existing code. Windows DNA also specifies how all these objects, especially objects from multiple vendors, communicate and work with one another reliably. Key elements enable any of the objects to run on different networked machines and provide ways to connect Windows-based systems to non-Windows systems. The third part involves a universal approach to data storage, so that any program can access data in any format and in any location, such as on a hard disk, in a computer database or email folder, or practically anywhere else the data is stored. The fourth is a mechanism that enables computer processing to be done wherever it makes the most sense, on the client, on the server, on some combination of both, or replicated from the server to the client for use by mobile employees. The unique thing about Windows DNA is that it is designed to help existing applications migrate to a distributed world, merging the best of the web with traditional enterprise applications. Most of the other approaches require a completely new base of applications to be written and restrict developers to a single computer language. Windows DNA allows customers to add value to their existing, vertically integrated solutions while gaining the benefits of the horizontally integrated PC platform. Once a company has a blueprint, another architectural imperative is to design programs with a three-tier architecture to separate the logic of a program into three classes: the presentation layer that displays data to the user, the middle layer to encapsulate the business rules of the application, whether a price cut should apply to an outstanding order, for instance, and the back-end layer that stores and retrieves business data. The three-tier architecture makes it possible to logically break up application functionality onto as many machines as needed and to change different tiers without affecting the others. Using this approach, Merrill Lynch neatly stitched more than 50 separate applications into the trusted global advisor system for financial consultants described in Chapter 5. Using Microsoft Office, Outlook, Windows Media Player, and other applications that can take advantage of COM, Merrill Lynch has created one interface that appears to users as a single, integrated, handcrafted application on the desktop presentation layer. Data for many of the 50 applications comes from an existing back-end data tier, which has databases ranging from Microsoft SQL Server and IBM's DB2 on Windows to Kix and DB2 on mainframes. Application servers running Microsoft Transaction Server and Message Queue in the middle tier use COM components to describe the business logic and coordinate the flow of data from the many backends. Such software systems can remove 40 to 50% of the code that developers would otherwise have to write to create distributed applications while handling the complex coordination and security issues. The various basic components are written in a variety of languages, including Visual Basic, Visual C++, and Java. Through COM, a mainframe-based 3270 application, such as Order Entry, is just another file folder on the desktop, and all web-based applications, now and in the future, simply work with the shell. Users never have to be aware of the source of the underlying application, web, local machine, client server, or mainframe, or when the application is upgraded. New functionality or new applications simply appear on the desktop. Developing a digital nervous system, a solutions framework. Building a digital nervous system requires a well-defined framework for how to organize and roll out the computer hardware and network, how to make or buy applications, and how to operate the system on a daily basis. The best practices for each of these steps are described in the Microsoft Solutions Framework, a set of guiding principles derived from the experience of Microsoft Consulting Services with a wide range of enterprise customers. The first hardware decision is the kind of desktop machines, clients, to give to users. Client hardware has historically required two separate kinds of computers. The first is the dumb terminal, typically used for task-oriented workers. The client machine is passive, primarily displaying whatever work has been done on the host machine or server. This approach allows central control, but network traffic or the server machine can be a bottleneck, and the approach won't work when people are on the move. The second is the PC, an adaptable tool used by knowledge workers. Computing tasks are handled on the PC or server according to business need. This approach is flexible, but can introduce management complexity. Organizations no longer have to make the trade-off between these two approaches. PC technology now combines a high degree of central control with the flexibility required for the new digital infrastructure. A program can run entirely on the server, and just the graphical elements appear on the end-user machine, or the same application can run totally on the PC. Since it will be a very long time before every device is attached to the network all the time, such standalone capabilities are important to knowledge workers. Today's web-based applications usually don't work if someone is disconnected. Within a company, employees can use the PC in terminal mode to browse for data but retain PC functionality for knowledge work. Factory and supplier planning, for example, can be a more or less automated process that runs on a large server, with a knowledge worker occasionally browsing for any problems with the production schedule. But if negotiating a large order with a customer, that same employee needs to have a tool to run what-if scenarios with the manufacturing schedule to see whether the order can be built in time. Remember, too, that many single-task jobs will disappear as the web enables self-service customer support. If a consumer calls a bank's customer service department, it will be about investment plans and asset diversification and other complex, high-value topics. The communication will likely involve interactive audio and video. The customer and employee will be working collaboratively. The consumer and the employee will both need powerful PCs. A general-purpose PC is a good choice all around. PCs do need to become more manageable. The newest versions of Microsoft Office and Windows 2000 let you configure the end-user computers flexibly from a central location. Users can have applications on their local machine, or they can access the application from a server, downloading the minimum amount of code needed to begin. Infrequently used functions can be downloaded automatically when required. If a part of an application is broken, it can be repaired automatically. Also, PCs will reconfigure themselves based on the identity of the person using the machine. People will be able to use any machine in the organization as if it were their own personal computer. When a user changes anything offline, or data on the server is changed while a user is online, the system will reconcile everything when the user reconnects to the network. This management comes through a central directory that stores user, application, and other information across the enterprise. Smarter software reduces cost of ownership. In 1997, the Gartner Group criticized PCs and Microsoft products for having a high total cost of ownership, TCO. Most of this cost was related to maintenance and upgrading. Scott Winkler, who was responsible for the Gartner Group's research on my company, said, "Microsoft has made it worse and more expensive to own these systems over the last 10 years because they were focused on functionality, not cost." Yet by mid-1998, Gartner said that the cost of ownership for PCs running on Windows 2000 networks would be 25% less than for previous PC systems. This reduction put PC solutions neck and neck, or perhaps a little ahead, of non-PC solutions in lowering TCO. David F. Carr, Gartner Group in a Reversal, says PC networks may cost less than NCs. Internet World, 6 April 1998. Improvements include easier remote installation and management of PCs and software on a network, the ability to centrally enforce standard PC configurations and re-establish user settings if a machine goes down, and tools that automatically upload basic information about a user's machine to a company's telephone help desk or web support site. This last software eliminates 30% of the time a typical support call takes, and the user data can be swept into a database for trend analysis. We're working on other improvements, too. When a customer adds a new application to her system, the system will one day be smart enough to arbitrate any conflicts between the new software and the software already on her machine. If the system detects a reason to change a setting in a file, it will make the change and not trouble the user unless it's absolutely necessary. If a file becomes corrupted or its settings are changed accidentally, the product will locate and install a correct version of the file, locally or remotely, in effect, healing itself. If the user has to act, her changes will be recorded for a support engineer to review later if problems arise and she does have to call support. We plan to add similar intelligence to tools for network administrators so they can better centrally manage all of the network resources and users that companies have throughout geographically dispersed offices. Developing a digital nervous system. Servers. The next major decision is what servers to deploy at the heart of your network. These servers do everything from running the business processes of your organization to storing the massive amounts of information at the heart of a digital nervous system. The old vertically integrated computing industry created a huge variety of incompatible computers and architectures in the server world. A new layer of software called middleware emerged to try to make them work together. Middleware, though, brought its own issues of cost and complexity. Boeing had a different computer system to track aircraft parts through each of 13 stages of manufacturing. Over time, Boeing ended up with middleware, whose only function was to ensure that the 13 systems interoperated, and still other middleware that kept the data consistent across all these systems. In addition to being expensive to maintain, 13 different systems generated 13 different bills of material. Coordinating all of this paperwork slowed manufacturing. Boeing's new production system replaces the 13 systems with a single source of product data throughout manufacturing. Geometric leaps in PC performance have eliminated the need for continued deployment of incompatible middle-tier systems. Today, PC-based servers support thousands of users, yet have 90% hardware commonality and 100% software compatibility with a desktop computer. This homogeneous platform is one reason PC systems are rapidly growing in popularity for servers. Having the same operating system on the desktop and on the server simplifies development and training and establishes a uniform architecture for distributed computing. Applications or parts of applications can move from any machine to any other machine. This commonality also makes it easier to connect knowledge workers to existing back-end data systems. Rather than having to have a middleware software component on every one of 10,000 desktop clients, the interoperability layer can run on a few dozen servers that connect the clients to the data tier. While the horizontally integrated PC computing model has not yet matched the older vertically integrated model in every aspect of computing capability, it is rapidly closing the gap. Only a handful of business applications in the world today require more scale than PC servers can provide. Within the next few years, even these applications will be able to run on the PC architecture. Moving away from the old applications is one of the toughest things for companies to do, but the transition is inevitable. The old mainframe applications weren't designed for rich web access by tens of thousands of users, or to give people access to real-time information. One reason the ERP vendors are doing so well is that companies are moving quickly to PC technology for major applications. Partly, the move saves money. More importantly, companies can integrate business data with the PC network and with the PC's ability to analyze information in rich ways. Developing a digital nervous system. Phases of developments. Implementation of a digital nervous system has three phases. They usually happen in a certain order, but can also occur in parallel. First, knowledge workers receive PCs for productivity use. Local area networks are installed to provide document sharing on file servers and web servers, and a single back-end email system is deployed to improve collaboration. Second comes the investment to link existing business operations into knowledge management systems. Usually, this is in the form of data warehousing that converts operational data into a form that is easy to search and query to glean business intelligence. The final and most dramatic step is the addition of new back-end applications that connect to existing systems but that use the new common architecture. The goal is to select projects that achieve the greatest reward in the shortest period of time. Electronic commerce is a common one. This approach means you can move to a new architecture without having to throw away your existing investments. McDonald's, the $35 billion fast food leader, has evolved its digital nervous system in a way that will be familiar to many companies. Its first systems were mainframes at its Oak Brook, Illinois headquarters for handling sales and financial reporting. In the mid-1980s, many McDonald's outlets installed Unix systems, running custom software for bookkeeping, inventory, and payroll. Sales data was faxed back to headquarters twice weekly to be keyed manually into the mainframe. In the first phase of creating a digital nervous system, McDonald's added PCs and departmental networks at its headquarters to handle productivity tasks and file sharing. However, every major business operation system at McDonald's was custom-built. The systems required significant integration to work together. In 1997, McDonald's resolved to get more out of the company's technology investment. After 18 months of research and pilot projects with help from the Gartner Group and Computer Sciences Corporation, McDonald's came to the conclusion that its old systems were too complex and would always be a cash drain. McDonald's decided to make a dramatic leap from proprietary mainframes and mini-computers to a single architecture involving a single desktop standard, standard networking services, and web-based information sharing. This new system uses the same architecture for the business operations systems in each outlet as for the knowledge management systems at headquarters. The new infrastructure, being implemented in late 1998, will give McDonald's the kind of real-time sales feedback Marks and Spencer gets, and the granular, up-to-date information on trends that Jiffy Lube managers get. McDonald's used the best technology available to solve its business problems at every point in time. The problem is that the original technologies were proprietary. Computing paradigms shifted every decade or so, from mainframe to mini-computer to client-server to web-based. Complexity grew, too. The rare company that achieved most of the capabilities of an integrated system had to pay a fortune to create the system, and even more to maintain it. It's a testimony to the skills of all IT shops historically that they could get these systems to work together at all. Developing a digital nervous system. Deciding what to buy. Using commercial, off-the-shelf software packages that are built on the same architecture is another way that companies can reduce the cost and complexity of building a digital nervous system. The successful companies select a few standards and enforce them strictly. The elements of a company's infrastructure that benefit most from standardization are desktop systems, desktop productivity applications, email systems, database systems, and network services. Most companies have standardized on a Windows desktop, and many have standardized on desktop productivity applications. Coke, Jiffy Lube, GlaxoWelcome, and many others have standardized on Microsoft Office. Having a standard corporate desktop and standard productivity software on top of that, spreadsheets, presentations, text documents, databases, provides the basic set of tools that knowledge workers need. The value of standard productivity applications applies not only within a company, but also across companies. I can't imagine how we could work with our development and business partners, our accountants, our public relations consultants, or our law firm without being able to easily exchange, edit, and annotate documents. Desktop applications are more than productivity tools. They are the access point into your company's most important data, as well as the components for your customized line of business applications. Document exchange requires a powerful email infrastructure. Through independent departmental decisions, acquisitions, and other factors, companies can end up with multiple messaging systems, some used for email and some used for groupware. Trying to hook these systems together keeps administrative costs high and makes it difficult to obtain the advantages of email, the ability to quickly and easily exchange documents, and the ability to integrate workflow applications throughout the entire company. Some host-based and internet email systems do not integrate well with desktop applications or the internet, so you need to be sure your email system embraces the PC platform and internet messaging protocols and standards. Do email right. Install a single email system for your company geared to support the activities of knowledge workers. Database decisions are highly influenced by the choice of underlying operating system, so you could start by picking a small number of operating systems to support. Components also make business and application logic much more independent of any one back-end database system, providing flexibility in integrating different database systems and preserving application investments. A single network operating system goes a long way towards simplicity in otherwise complex back-end systems. People are just beginning to understand the value of such features as a comprehensive security model for the network and all of the applications that run on it. A user can log on to the system once and access every application for which he or she has privileges, whether database, email, or web page. An administrator can use a single set of tools to manage users, applications, and networked resources, such as printers. The ability to search for data across the network and across multiple formats, database, email, and documents of any kind, is dramatically simplified. Standardizing important elements of the infrastructure doesn't mean that every department or user should be forced to use only the applications decreed by central planning. In general, companies should standardize software packages corporate-wide when they affect corporate-wide communication and integration. Otherwise, departments and business units should be free to choose best-of-breed applications particular to their business needs. Project management, brochure design, marketing analysis, product development, and so on. As long as the business applications run on the mainstream platform, the central IT department won't have to be greatly involved in the decision process for individual business units. Developing a digital nervous system. Deciding what to build. If packaged software does not solve your business needs out of the box, look for software products that are easy to customize. It's better to start with commercial software and customize the package than to build a custom application from scratch. A three-tier architectural blueprint, combined with commercial software that uses a component approach, makes customization much more possible. Interaction with partners of all sizes requires component technology that works for companies of all sizes. You won't find mainframe technology in small and medium-sized companies. It's just too expensive. But companies of all sizes have one thing in common, PC technology. The fact that Windows DNA is pervasive in all Windows systems makes it very attractive to software developers. Windows DNA enables the integration of all data types, including voice and video, with computer applications. One decision, then, is when a company should merge its physical voice and data networks. The telephone network is today a different set of wires running different standards from those of the data network. Major telecom suppliers such as Lucent and Nortel are embracing computer networks, and major data networking suppliers such as Cisco are embracing voice communications. The standards for integrating data and voice will be internet-based, and the competition will be intense. For organizations, putting in a single voice data network is a big infrastructure investment. Every CEO should consider such a transition during major remodeling or new construction, but otherwise, take a long, hard look at the costs versus benefits of replacing the entire physical structure. Saving on infrastructure. The financial savings from standardizing on a single infrastructure can be very high. McDonald's predicts an 18% annual savings with its new infrastructure. Dayton Hudson, the retail chain, spent $100 million in creating its new infrastructure and saved that much in the first year. The all-time record for infrastructure realignment and cost-cutting, though, may go to Lockheed Martin, the largest defense contractor in the United States. When Lockheed and Martin Marietta merged in March 1995 in the largest deal in aerospace history, the new company had a combined $1 billion IT budget. Martin Marietta was 16 months into IT consolidation stemming from its merger with GE Aerospace. Lockheed still had 12 separate IT organizations, and several attempts had failed to consolidate IT in many of the business units in both companies. Joe Cleveland, then Internal Information Systems Vice President for Martin Marietta, promised to cut IT spending in the merged company by a total of $700 million over 5 years, reduce IT headcount by 25%, and improve service to the business units. He got the top IT job in the new company, and in just 2 years bettered the target of $700 million in cumulative budget reduction, 3 years ahead of schedule. He succeeded by standardizing infrastructure and using a virtual organization to extend the resources and services of IT. Cleveland, now President of Enterprise Information Systems, EIS, for Lockheed Martin, replaced the 24 existing email systems residing on 900 servers with a single corporate messaging system on 117 servers for an 87% reduction in servers and related cost. Message delivery was reduced from 1 day to less than 3 minutes for internal messages and less than 10 minutes for internet messages. He consolidated volume and leveraged economies of scale to reduce costs on voice, video, and data networks, collapsed a number of data centers into 2 major centers, consolidated numerous server centers into server farms, consolidated maintenance contracts, and developed strategic partners to reduce procurement costs. To optimize IT resources, Cleveland implemented the concept of a virtual organization in place of the traditional geographic organization, which had limited the capabilities of the organization to assets and skills in a particular location. Lockheed Martin created 4 consolidated IT functions and aligned a CIO for each of Lockheed Martin's business sectors to translate business requirements to IT solutions. When a business unit identifies an IT requirement, a virtual team is formed from a program manager and representatives from each of the IT functional areas. This team completes its roster from a pool of more than 4,000 skilled IT professionals according to needs rather than to work location. The team utilizes collaborative tools such as email, website forums, teleconferencing, video conferencing, and net meeting to work virtually. When face-to-face meetings are required, people travel, but collaborative tools keep travel to a minimum. This virtual organization helped Lockheed Martin to convert 100,000 users to Microsoft Exchange email in a little over a year because all of the IT people who had anything to do with networks and messaging were on the same team. IT staff working on projects across different business sectors are also spotting common business processes early, helping business units leverage existing solutions to save time and money. Because they engage with their business counterparts directly, IT employees are encouraged to actively contribute new ideas. Having met its initial goal of consolidating technology spending, Lockheed Martin is now willing to spend technology dollars to help business. Technology people are now thinking much more like business people, which is how it should be. Designing for information flow. As McDonald's, Dayton Hudson, Lockheed Martin, and others have learned, even the first steps in implementing the right architecture can eliminate enough complexity to pay for the transition. The digital revolution means that big companies can buy most of a rich software infrastructure rather than build it from scratch. Small or medium-sized businesses can afford a rich software infrastructure for the first time. They're no longer priced out of the game. The new horizontally integrated computer industry provides the best business and technical model for the future. The inexorable competition in each layer of the industry, chips, systems, software, solutions, and service, drives each area ahead independently of any other. This high-volume model attracts more and more software developers who create packaged software that reduces the cost of business. More developers mean more and more of the innovative work is occurring first or exclusively on the new platform. This positive feedback loop has drawn in virtually all traditional enterprise vendors as important supporters of the platform and has created the largest service capability in the computer industry. A major success in the horizontally integrated approach is Windows computing, which, by standardizing the operating system, creates incredible variety in the hardware systems on which it runs and in the software solutions that can be built upon it. Scale economics for research and development in the PC industry dwarf what any one company can do in an old vertical approach. The PC industry as a whole spends more than $15 billion a year on R&D, while Sun, about the only pure vertical player anymore, spends less than $2 billion on R&D. Apple, which also sells an entire hardware-software system, has primarily been a desktop company rather than a provider of enterprise business solutions. By staying in the mainstream, businesses can ride the massive R&D investments and the innovation that is concentrated in the horizontal model. Quite simply, the high-volume world is beating the low-volume world in the speed of technological advance. Over the years, more and more of the traditional vendors have taken an increasing PC focus, including Fujitsu, HP, ICL, NEC, Unisys, and others. IBM is not purely in either camp, continuing its vertical strategy with mainframes and mini-computers, while also developing a business around the horizontal PC model. When you pick PCs to build business systems on, you're retaining your choice of hardware without hurting your software investment. You can go to whichever hardware vendor has the best service or the fastest or cheapest machine today. Every few years, when you renew your hardware systems, you can reweigh those criteria and rebid the purchase without worrying about having to change your software applications or any of your training. Current software investments will carry forward as the PC evolves into new form factors, such as tablet devices and devices that recognize speech. Your organization's computing architecture should be a unifying design that maintains overall integration while enabling incremental change, especially at the departmental level. Flexibility is important because it's impossible to define in advance a single computing approach across the entire enterprise. In large companies, such plans inevitably become too rigid and can fail to keep up with the pace of business change. Faced with inflexibility, business managers have felt justified in going around IT to create their own solutions. This is how PCs and PC networks came into many companies in the first place. The standards of the digital revolution, the PC, the microprocessor that will make other new digital devices possible, and the Internet, provide companies a way to implement a unified architecture without busting the bank. Companies can move to the new architecture step by step. Many are already implementing the first phase of migrating knowledge workers to a standard platform, network operating system, and email. The next steps, which can happen project by project, are to connect these knowledge systems with existing business operations systems, to build new business systems on the new architecture, and, over time, to replace older business systems. Year 2000 illustrates short-term thinking about software. Unless updated, many software programs can't tell the difference between the year 1900 and 2000, causing them to miscalculate such things as pension amounts. This year 2000 problem stems from a failure of people 30 years ago to think of software as a long-term asset. They believed that the primary asset was the hardware and that the software was transitory. History has taught us the opposite. It's the hardware that goes obsolete first, while software applications stay around seemingly forever. Every major computer vendor offers some form of compliance for being Y2K ready, with a series of processes to test and upgrade customer systems. As of early 1999, any organization that is not well on its way to implementing Y2K solutions can only practice triage. A company should identify its most crucial business applications or the most crucial modules in those applications and move them to a modern solution. It should deal with other applications later, according to priority. A component approach will eliminate the next Y2K problem, whatever it happens to be. Developers will be able to alter individual modules, such as those that calculate dates, instead of going through millions of lines of code to make changes. This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now. Business at the Speed of Thought by Bill Gates with Collins Hemingway. Concluded. A component approach will eliminate the next Y2K problem, whatever it happens to be. Developers will be able to alter individual modules, such as those that calculate dates, instead of going through millions of lines of code to make changes. But shifting the role of technology from a sunk cost to a capital investment will happen only if companies recognize the long-term nature of software investments and choose software platforms and strategies accordingly. Diagnosing your digital nervous system. Do you reduce cost and complexity by using commercial, off-the-shelf software packages whenever possible? Do you use a single email system company-wide? Does your architecture provide a good top-level framework for corporate-wide applications while enabling bottoms-up development of departmental applications? Do you practice three-tier application development so you can logically break up applications on as many machines as you need and change different parts of the code without affecting the others? Do you use component technology to integrate software? Are you using standard internet technologies? Do your digital systems unify corporate-wide applications while facilitating bottoms-up development of departmental applications? Why did you write this book, Business at the Speed of Thought?
I wrote Business at the Speed of Thought to help business leaders understand how they can take advantage of the incredible changes taking place. I think business will change more in the next 10 years than it has in the last 50. And businesses that seize the opportunity and use digital tools to move information inside their enterprise, as well as to reach out to customers in new ways, they'll lead in this era.
Business at the Speed of Thought is an interesting title. What exactly does it mean?
Well, up till now, the speed of business has been limited by moving information around. But with digital tools, moving that information at the speed of light, the only constraint is how well you use your knowledge workers, your thinkers, to react to what's going on, to plan new products, to make sure you're using all of your resources in the right way. So Business at the Speed of Thought says that business will be done a new way, and it's about empowering those knowledge workers and reaching out with digital tools to make sure that all the best thinking gets applied.
Who's the intended audience for this book?
Business at the Speed of Thought was written for people who think about business. A lot of it is aimed at a CEO who's thinking how to transform their company for this new era. A lot of it's written for workers in these enterprises who are thinking about how they can be innovative in moving their company to be more efficient. It's really for anybody thinking about the future of business, thinking about how companies will deliver services and products in better ways using the wonderful advances that technology has made available. Part of my motivation for writing it is the discussions I've had with CEOs over the last few years where they've been asking, you know, what insights do we have about how they can use these new advances? And I thought it would make sense to take some examples of companies that are leading the way, really get it down on paper so that people could see a composite of what a modern company will look like.
Your first book, The Road Ahead, described a vision of the future. How would you characterize Business at the Speed of Thought?
Business at the Speed of Thought is quite a bit different than The Road Ahead because it focuses on the business person. What is their opportunity? What are some great examples of people who are already doing the right things for this era? Of course, technology is the change agent here. It is the thing that's creating the opportunity to do business in new ways. So I update a few of the technological predictions, but that's a very small part of this book. The real focus here is to even give people a checklist of the kind of things they ought to be thinking about as they prepare their organization for this new world.
The idea of a digital nervous system is at the core of the book. Exactly what is this?
The term digital nervous system talks about a company taking the approach of getting all their information to be easily available and really empowering their workers. It combines the latest PC, internet, and communications technologies, but far more important than that is the processes you build around digital activities. For example, capturing all the information about customers and taking full advantage of that. For example, being able to allow teams to come together even when they're in different locations, or even if they don't work for your company, but they're a partner company. That kind of capability can only come with a comprehensive plan for the company to build a digital nervous system.
Your book uses two new phrases, the web work style and the web lifestyle. What do they mean?
Well, the web, of course, is referring to the internet and the way that all the rich information out there will allow people to find out whatever they want to know. So the web will change the way we work. The web will allow some work to be done from at home. The web will allow people to collaborate and share like never before. And so I think that whole approach to work deserved a term. So I coined that new term, web work style. Web lifestyle is the home equivalent of that, the idea that when you want to plan a trip, you want to stay in touch with relatives who are far away, things like exchanging photos, finding the best prices, being able to select creative gifts, and just using it to communicate, that will become commonplace. Any activity you're going to engage in, whether it's buying or simply planning something, you'll be able to take advantage of the web, and you'll even take it for granted. It won't be as much trouble as it is today. The use of the PC and the internet at work is grown up quite a bit, and companies now are putting the information there, and the improvements that will be taking place, the price of the PC coming down, the improvements in communications, and these new devices that will hook us up to the web will all mean that we'll be able to adapt a new way of doing things that just helps us get done what we've always wanted to get done.
In both this book and your first book, The Road Ahead, you discuss an idea called friction-free capitalism. What is this concept?
The Adam Smith ideal for capitalism is that all buyers know about all sellers. They have perfect information, and there's no real overhead to go out and find out what's going on in the marketplace. But in the real world, that ideal is not achieved. For example, say you're interested in having somebody come in and do some part-time work, and you want to know what their background is and what their references are. That's so much trouble to do that it's an imperfect market. With digital systems, we can now get very close to that Adam Smith ideal, where every buyer will know the choices that they have. The big winner here, of course, is the consumer who wants to purchase something, and all of business will have to adjust to the fact that this friction-free capitalism will restructure things. In many ways, it'll cut out middlemen. It'll create an opportunity to compete across all countries on a global basis, which hasn't been true in most businesses heretofore. And so it forces business people to step back and rethink how they add value.
This book paints a very fierce world of competition for business with these new technologies and the changes they bring. Is business really going to be this tough, and what's going to be the result of that competition?
Business has always had one purpose, and that is to deliver great products and services to customers. And the internet will allow business to do its job even better. The intensity of competition will be greater than before. The velocity at which business will improve things or a new competitor will show up will be much greater than ever in the past. And a lot of the things that have held back competition, the difficulty of physical distribution or building a set of stores, that kind of thing will no longer be as limiting as they have in the past. And so I'd say, yes, competition will be more intense, but that's a fantastic thing for buyers and business people have a chance to adjust to this new world, and some will come out as winners because they've adopted in a way that others have not.
What things should a business person do today to get ready for the digital age and the change in the marketplace?
I think every business person needs to get personally involved in using the PC and the internet, going out and buying some products, seeing the type of homepage their company has, see what their competitors have there. That'll help them to appreciate that whatever constituency they're working with, partners, shareholders, prospective employees, and most importantly, their customers, that this really is a new way of communicating. Another key step I think a company should take is really strive to get things off of paper and into digital form. The more you can get that online, the more you increase worker efficiency, and the more you get creativity from all your workers.
You talk a lot in the book about empowering the knowledge worker. Why such a strong emphasis?
Well, a knowledge worker is somebody who takes information and uses it in an intelligent way, not in a preordained, you know, kind of rote, just enter the data into the computer type way. I think that all workers will become knowledge workers because those simplistic kind of jobs will be eliminated. Now, there's an opportunity there to use these knowledge workers to help customers in new ways. That can only be done, though, if it's easy for them to get the information, if it's literally at their fingertips and they're very comfortable with the tools that deliver up that information. And so there's definitely a theme here that the way you use your workers will count more in the future.
Would you say that Microsoft or any other company has a perfect digital nervous system today?
Absolutely not. No company today is got their information in this easy-to-access form that is the ideal put forward in the book. Microsoft is one of the pioneers who's done a number of things to move in that direction. And in fact, Microsoft is used as an example. The way that we track some of our sales data is good. The way that we've eliminated forms inside the company is very good. But I'd say we're probably only halfway towards what we really need to do to be as efficient as this era will demand for all companies. I also included lots of examples from different industries, examples from the car industry, from banking, from companies that are leaders in their field, where they've taken a certain area and used a digital nervous system type approach and have gotten lots of benefit out of it. In fact, it's created momentum in those companies to do other projects as well. So there's a lot to be done, even in the companies that have put the most into this.
What does it take to build a digital nervous system? Is it a matter of replacing what you have or starting fresh, beginning totally from scratch?
Building a digital nervous system does not require some huge new investment in hardware and software. In fact, most companies have the key building blocks today. They're giving their knowledge workers PCs on their desktop. They're networking those computers together. And they've probably got some kind of site out on the internet and the ability to have information flow into and out of the company across the internet. A lot of the idea is taking that and using it in a more profound way, taking information that was on paper and processes that where information was not captured and getting it onto your intranet and building tools so that the knowledge workers find that information very easy to get to. And so there isn't a huge amount of money required here. It's much more a question of stepping back, thinking through what's key to your company, and having leadership from the top that says that you are going to use this tool, you are going to take these new approaches.
Several times you talk about the necessity of the CEO and other senior business managers to lead the way in the new technology, yet most people think that's the CIO's function.
Well, there's no way a business can approach a digital nervous system if the CEO isn't enthused about that and really pushing all the processes to go in that direction. The CIO has a key role to play. In fact, their job will be even more important, even more challenging, if they have a CEO who's got this as part of their vision. And so a lot of the book is explaining the business impact, the business benefits that will be created as you move towards a digital nervous system. And that's why the key audience is business people.
You also have special chapters on things like schools and government. How can this technology be used to reshape the public sector?
Well, the basic idea of a digital nervous system, where you have everything online and easily accessible, applies to enterprises of all types. You know, think about government. Their business is to help process information and to make a lot of that information available to the public. And so the efficiency and improvement that can be gained by a digital nervous system inside government is, if anything, greater than inside your typical business. Likewise, think about education. Students are, in a sense, the ultimate knowledge workers. Their whole job is to try out problems, see how they solve those problems, and have access to a broader set of information than you need inside a typical business. And so letting those students have this tool, letting them bring back the things they've seen and share that with other students, that kind of activity can make education more effective than ever before. And I do highlight the fact that there are some governments, mostly in smaller countries, and some schools who are already leading the way in doing those things. And it was kind of amazing as I wrote the book how the principles that applied to large companies, those principles applied equally well to these different kinds of enterprises and smaller enterprises. And in fact, the smaller you get, the more you need to partner with other people using these digital tools so that you can be competitive with the large companies that will be doing the same thing.
One of the ideas that you expressed was that a big business needs to be able to act like a small business in terms of speed and responsiveness. And a small company needs to be able to act like a big company in terms of projecting itself and doing more things. Do you see the digital nervous system as a way to do this?
Well, there's always been an issue in business of what's the appropriate scale. What things do you need to do inside a company, and what things should you do outside? I actually see these digital nervous systems as changing that balance somewhat. Big companies will choose to do some additional things outside. But as big companies are doing these things well, they'll be overcoming a lot of the overhead they have as a large company. They have the benefit of their scale, the breadth of their product line, the depth of expertise, but the cost to share information inside the organization is what has made them often cumbersome and bureaucratic. And so these tools really address the things that make large enterprises less efficient. For the small enterprises, what these tools do is allow them to reach out to other small enterprises, and even though that they may not be in the same building, even though they may not be in the same city, they can work together and present to the customer a set of offerings that are just as good as a large-scale company could do in competition with them. And so, yes, it does equal the playing field between businesses of different sizes if it's used in the right way.
Is the digital economy a global phenomenon?
I think the message about how businesses will change is definitely a global message. It's a global message because the opportunity is there for everyone. Also because businesses will be competing with companies in other countries much more than they ever have in the past. Businesses in the United States have definitely taken the lead in adopting these digital approaches. And I think there are many reasons for that. The popularity of the personal computer and the internet there, the fact that college students coming into these businesses have all been using the internet as students to sign up for classes or communicate with their friends. I'm often asked, does the U.S. have a permanent lead in this? And the answer is absolutely not. The technologies are available on a global basis. Part of the goal of the book is to get business leaders all over the world to see that this is coming. And so I'm hopeful that the book stimulates more innovative use of these new tools all over the world, particularly in places where so far the uptake has been a little slower.
This has been a Hachette Audio production of Business at the Speed of Thought, Using a Digital Nervous System, written by Bill Gates with Collins Hemingway, read by Jonathan Mayrose, produced and directed by Books on Tape, executive producer Maya Thomas. Business at the Speed of Thought is also available in print and as an ebook from Grand Central Publishing, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 1999 by William H. Gates III. Audio production copyright 1999 Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this audiobook without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the audiobook other than for review purposes, please contact permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.